Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're here to talk about Season 4, Episode 8, titled Papa. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I liked it a lot, but I'm surprised at how much unfinished business it left for the finale. Like, right? If you had put a gun to my head, I would have been like, for sure, at the end of this episode, Hopper is going to be on U.S. soil. They do have Mike and that band of Merry Misfits in the general vicinity, you know, like they've got that part of the band back together. But I'm again, and there's definitely connecting tissue, like, you know, Nancy and Steve have figured out, you know, what's going on in Fresno or whatever, California. But they're not going to get together before the finale. I thought that was kind of shocking.
And they're still so far away. It's 2,000 miles.
Yeah,
it's like. They talk about, like, I don't know how you move Elle and Mike and everybody from the desert to Indiana in an evening.
No, I mean, they talk about, like, what kind of crazy ass government special project strings you'd have to pull to even come close. Right. And my guess is they're going to go through the Upside Down.
Yeah.
And that's going to, but like, the Upside Down is still real geography. Like, it seems like it. Maybe there's timey-wimey portal shit that you can do to cut a shortcut through it. But, and the thing is, it's like, it's not like nothing happened this episode. There was a lot of shit to happen this episode. It's just, of course, I guess that's why you have a 2.5-hour finale.
Yes, I was gonna say, it takes time
to clean your plate.
You might be able to get them across the country in 2 hours and 19 minutes, I think it is, for the finale. It's a long one.
Jack Bauer's driving for sure.
Yeah, and there's no traffic, baby. The other thing, I don't know, I feel like this is good for the finale because there's gonna be everybody with this mad rush to come together. There are rogue elements that are still there to, like, really fuck things up, like those jocks. Right. They're loaded up with weapons, and they spotted the RV, maybe. They might be following them. I'm pretty sure they're gonna come in to this Vecna house at the last minute and really just complicate things.
You're probably right. That was an interesting twist. The, you know, the traditional Stranger Things kids arming scene, this time at an Army Navy surplus store. But then the jock shows up and he's got a hand cannon and he's menacing Nancy. Yeah, no, there's that. There's
it was a little
Lieutenant
bit of
Colonel
like
Sullivan's of the world. That's there as spoilers. Yeah.
Yep. It was a little bit of a coincidence, not even little. It was a huge coincidence to me that everybody would be there at the same time at the war store, because, like, Robin's crush is there with her boyfriend. You've got the jocks there. You've got our group there. It's like this. Maybe the arcade would have been like a more appropriate place for everybody to happen to be there. But this felt a little stretched.
Yeah, the Army Navy surplus store was blown out like it was Black Friday and they're an actually popular store to go to.
It's like everybody knew the Upside Down was coming, right?
I've always liked Army Navy surplus stores. I've been frequenting them in the last year because my son's got way into airsoft, and guess where you can get really cheap fucking fatigues and shit.
Sure.
But I've never gone there, and there's been more than like two other customers on like beautiful Saturdays and stuff. So it's like, I don't know. I thought that was like, they especially since they established it, like Hawkins is a rural town.
Right.
And this is like the next rural town over where even the Hawkins people's like, man, there's some fucking weird rednecks over there. So I thought that was some comedy. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And it's like a mega store too, right? It's not even like most of the surplus stores I've been to are kind of holes in the wall. Maybe that's not true of all of them, but this was like,
there's some nice ones,
branding campaign. Sure. It was a good 10,000 square feet. It was huge.
And it's the other thing that's, I mean, it's uncommon from my experience. I don't know what things look like on the West Coast, but like, I've never seen an Army Navy surplus store that actually sells live ammunition and weapons.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that seems like they are conflating the good old fashioned gun store, which God knows there's a shit ton. In fact, this one looked so much like Bradus Guns, which is like the kind of the biggest one of these in Indiana, that I almost thought was an intentional homage. But they take like that and then the Army Navy surplus store and like welded them together. Maybe those do exist. Yeah. I feel like that's a trope in like Commando. We just watch Commando and like, you know, you go to, but you literally can't buy like bazookas and grenades and even really clips and ammo at these places or magazines. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just haven't been to an Army Navy surplus store like this.
Could be.
They do exist.
But maybe that's the thing. If you ever do sell weapons, that's what brings the crowds out. That's what gets you Memorial Day shopping crowds 24/7, 365.
They were doing some kind of wardrobe homage here with Robin's crush's wardrobe. She's got this hat and this sweater that I feel was taken straight off of Molly Ringwald in one of her movies. It might have been, there might be a more specific reference that I don't get, but yeah, that outfit was super 80s.
You know, a lot of people pointed out, and I didn't see it through the first run because we, you know, weren't considering feedback. But a lot of people pointed out since then that Eddie is an 80s Robert Downey Jr. homage. And ever since someone pointed it out, I cannot fucking not see it. Like when he was having that weird bonding session with Destin or Dustin, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, this is RDJ Jr.
I like that. A couple of the sweet moments in this episode I really liked. You know, him and Dustin just horsing around, and him telling Dustin never change was great. I thought the moment with Lucas and Max was great, where he's like, you know, what was this happiest moment of your life? Did it involve me? Was I there? She's like, it might have, you know.
Yeah.
That's awful presumptuous of you, but it might have.
The ice is starting to thaw because, you know, she was so closed down and reserved at the beginning of the season.
Right.
It's nice. And that's the nice about these expanded run times is they do give time to have these meaningful character moments, which, I mean, it seems pretty clear. We speculated this on the last half season. Some of these kids, at least one is going to die. I mean, the episode itself is talking like Robin is saying, we're not going to make it off so lucky this time.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, are they going to kill Robin?
Oh, man. Robin and Steve are so cute together.
I know.
I don't know, man. I there's not a kid we could lose, and I'd be like, yeah, that's fine.
Right. Oh, we talked about that. But I feel like the Robin and Steve in particular feel like they have big targets painted on their back.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Of course, you can't also discount Max. Like, she is the one, they are using her for bait to lure out Vecna. And if something goes wrong, he's going to kill her. So, I don't know. I'm fairly worried about everyone except for, like, maybe Lucas and Dustin. I think they're the safest.
Yeah.
Mike, yeah, honestly. Honestly, if they could kill Mike, I wouldn't care.
I could definitely see Eddie getting taken out.
Eddie would be an interesting one too. Yeah. I didn't even consider him part of the kids because he just joined up this season. But yeah, no, they could definitely take him out as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
What are the Ruskies doing with vivisected Demogorgons, tubes, Independence Day style tubes full of aliens, and what I can only describe as a smoke monster imprisoned in a large tank?
I mean, they're trying to weaponize the Upside Down, right? It's got to be.
Are they just studying? Like, have we ever seen that kind of smoke monster before?
Is
that kind of how the Mind Flayer manifests sometimes?
Yeah, I feel like there might have been something with that last season. But I couldn't put my finger on it either. But yeah, I mean, of course they're experimenting. But in my mind, it's with an eye to weaponizing the Upside Down and its creatures.
Yeah. I want to collect apologies and internet points. Because, first of all, I've been saying this clock means something this whole goddamn season. I didn't know what. It means something. Four gongs, four deaths, boom.
Four
also,
gates, four chants, yeah.
Everybody's saying, Aaron, the timelines don't line up. Elle couldn't have opened the portal when she killed. Bull fucking shit. I don't get. Take your wiki timelines and shove them up your ass because it's canon official. Dr. Brenner himself.
Yeah.
She ripped open the portal that day when she killed one. Boom. Boom. I use my eyeballs and my ear holes to make correct conclusions to win against the internet orthodoxy. And I came out on top. So yeah, I'll take my internet points for that. You rarely see it.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to watch. It's a pleasure to be here to witness defeating the internet. I will say that.
Thank you. But no, what do we like? like I said, it's a weird one of those things where it's like, that's not new information to me because that's what I thought was happening, and then people talked me out of it. But now I think that the I mean, obviously she didn't escape then, because that's when Brenner started, you know, torturing kids to Electric Boogaloo, knowing that he's got something there with Elle. It also explains, you know, there's something that a lot of people surmised about that event also kind of like blew her mind literally and it caused her regression.
And all that stuff was pretty down, cool. Quite a bit.
Like, yeah. Knocked her down a couple levels.
If that means that the entire time that we've been watching Elle, we've been seeing a powered down version of her, or if she has slowly regained all of her powers over the last four seasons.
I think she's somewhere like last season when she closed the gate, she's probably somewhere in between her most powerful, like when she was a 6 or 7 year old, and her depowered state just escaping the lab. But
let me ask you this. Was her
demonstration, we haven't seen her fully uncorked.
When she lifted that 10,000 pound experiment or whatever, as Owen says, did that impress you? Did that impress you as much as like seeing her tear into a Demogorgon or fight off the Mind Flayer?
Flip off a truck that's coming at her 45 miles an hour. Yeah. Right. In fact, until the guy said, like, it's a 10,000 pound tank, I'm like, what the?
Yeah, same here. I was not super impressed by that. I wish they had had a better demonstration of her new powers.
It's just more that she's back. Like, this isn't her barely able to subdue two or three guards. This isn't her like shorting out power. Like, this is a true demonstration of raw power. Lifting 5-6 tons ain't nothing, you know?
Oh, totally. To me, honestly, when she took down the helicopter, that was more of a demonstration of her enhanced powers.
Oh, yeah.
Because she did it with the inhibitor collar still on and still active. So, yeah, I feel like she is powered up at this point beyond.
Is that an inhibitor collar or is that just a pain collar?
Oh, is it? Is it meant to shock her? Because
he said something. I think so. Because when he puts it on, he goes, I never intend to activate this. So, like, I thought that was some kind of pain compliance thing rather than like a, you know, Magneto helmet style inhibitor.
Well, never mind.
But I could be wrong.
I don't know what power level she is now.
Let me check the Stranger Things wiki. I'm sure they have the answer.
No, don't bother. They don't know anything over there.
I'm roasting the shit out of like two or three people. I'm so sorry. I just like if you were on the couch at 9:30 a.m. the speed at which I took to my feet and said aha was impressive.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions around the Brenner L stuff. Brenner's a shit, right? He's always been kind of a shit. Every time that Elle goes at him and says like, "Oh, I'm gonna blow the doors off this place, and if you try and stop me, I'm gonna kill you." I'm just like, just kill him and then blow the doors off. He doesn't deserve to live. I want to see him die. I think I saw him die in this episode, but I'm not 100% sure. Is Brenner dead?
Man, he has like a 50 caliber hole blown right through his chest. I was impressed he lived as long as he did
too. Yeah, which
to have a tearful goodbye. But yeah, I mean. Some people were kind of like, oh, maybe Brenner from a certain point of view is a good guy. No, he's a complete fucking shit.
Yeah.
He is a liar and a narcissist and a sociopath. And I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad Owens, the true daddy at the Hawkins lab is taken back over.
Yeah. I do wonder, you know, would Elle be as powerful as she is without Brenner's meddling? But the other flip side of that is, would she need to be? You know, because he's destroying children and ripping holes in the universe. And yeah, well, now we need a superhero because he fucked things up so bad, Brenner.
Right. It's like it's probably true that Elle is stronger than if he hadn't broken and rebuilt her so many times. But as Elle points it out, it's also true that everything that they need her to save from the world ending apocalypse is a direct result of Brenner doing that shit.
Right.
So, like, congratulate. Yeah. To directly answer your question about him being dead, if he comes back to life, I'll be very disappointed because this is his death is more about Elle's arc of like no longer, you know, being conflicted in how she feels and having this kind of quote unquote daddy issue about it. Like, she let go of him and left him behind appropriately. Mm-hmm. Before he died, I thought it was symbolic of her like turning her back, turning the corner, you know, like a new era of like strength, resilience, and self-confidence. And if they bring him back to, like, I don't know, reignite all that stuff, like, that'll be going backwards. So that'd be going reverse at 45 miles an hour. So I think he's dead. And like, even it was played as like, you know, him trying to grasp something that's forever out of his reach as he dies. Like, the kids are driving off and this is the closest thing he had to a daughter and all. And he's and his arc is over too. Like, he dies a lonely old man, unfulfilled, unremarked, considered a traitor by his own country. And I, like I said, if they resurrect him, that'll fuck all that up in a way that it didn't when they resurrected him the first time. Because that was still all unfinished business.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because he's looking for forgiveness here from Elle. I definitely don't think he gets it. Like, it's unspoken here, but I think her dropping his hand is saying, nah, you're not getting it. So.
I want to talk about Steve. Steve looks really good with cut off sleeves and his guns out. And when he was roaring at everybody to like find something to hang on to in the RV as he's taken off, I thought suddenly it's like, he would be a not bad Harrison Ford replacement if you wanted to make some younger Indiana Jones stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Ansel Elgort, like, I thought he's a really good one, but I think he's got some problems plaguing him at this point. But Joe Creer, he seems like a cool dude. And I wouldn't have thought it. But yeah, like the way he's kind of filled out and bulked up this season, and that, like... I for whatever reason, I just watched Last Crusade and Crystal Skull this week.
Okay. Interesting.
And Harrison
combo.
Ford does a lot of like where he's just kind of like out of control and bellowing at people and just like making things work. I'm like, holy shit, that's huge Steve energy. And I think he would. I would like to see some, again, not young Indiana Jones, but like Harrison Ford golden era Indiana Jones with Steve. Why not?
Yeah.
Or I guess Joe.
Yeah, that'd be great. I love that scene where they steal the RV. They're stealing these people's house.
So funny.
And their car at the same time. You've got the Mike Myers mask, which like starts all of that off.
Oh my God. when he comes out of Mike.
Yes.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. The Duffer Brothers are still pretty good at what they do, even though I think they're getting... It's a little bit of their idol Stephen King. He's infected them with someone needs to edit their scripts and kind of cut it back. But they still have that gut, you know, an eye for like the quick joke. And
yeah,
that was hilarious. Do you think Nancy's totally smitten with Steve at this point? That like five or six kids speech like sealed the deal. It makes me think there's no way both of them survive.
I don't know.
It's a more or less likely for them to live now that there's a romantic connection there.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live. Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
I want to see what happens when Jonathan gets back. I've reserved judgment until then, and I know it's going to be the end of the season by then, and all that business will probably be resolved. I don't think that's going to head into season 5 without comment. So I don't know. I really want to know what Jonathan thinks.
I hope it doesn't come down to a sleeveless vest and hair contest, because Jonathan just shouldn't even show up to that competition. No. Holy shit.
the volume, he can't out volume Steve. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I wonder how, because it's very much up in the air how Hopper and Joyce are going to get back to the States. Like, clearly this helicopter is not going to work. Owens is otherwise disposed and is trying to arrange travel for himself. I wonder if that's the whole gag, is like that Owens is starting to make this like desperate overland transport, and they're just going to like join up with it. You know, it's like, instead of taking L and everybody, it's going to take Hopper and Joyce
from Russia.
No, they'll have to get to America, but like there it'll be, they'll have the highway to Hawkins already built, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah, it could be.
But yeah, I don't know how they're going to pull strings to get him out of Russia with the KGB watching. That's gonna, man, it feels like the believable. That's gonna take up a lot of finale time, like a half hour, 45 minutes.
I know, dude.
But they still got 2 hours, so
right. That's not even half of the thing. One of the moments we didn't talk about that is that I want to ask you about, because you've got theories about Will and Will's sexuality. What's going on with Will in the RV? He's getting very emotional over Mike and Elle. And I'm not sure if this is like a friends forever kind of thing, or if this is a Mike and Will need to get together kind of thing.
It felt to me, not growing up in Indiana as a young gay man, but it felt to me like this was Will trying to put a brave face on what he is now seeing as the inevitable. Like, yeah. Mike has come out to California, or clearly is not coming out as gay, clearly still smitten with Elle, and him trying to, you know, and I'm not saying trying like in like a, he's trying to do something. He's trying to pull something. He's trying to shore up and save the friendship and reinforce that, because he doesn't like, you know, like if he had some kind of romantic hopes for Mike, I don't think he wants to lose the friendship over that by any means. That's how I read it. But
yeah. I don't know, it's interesting. With the heart painted on Mike's shield in his drawing, I'm like, is that what he says it is, or is this more than that?
That's what I'm saying. He's putting a brave face. I think he painted it as kind of like a trip, but it's, I don't know. It's like, if you're paint, but I don't know how a young gay guy would think in Indiana, because like, you put the heart on there because you're sweet on him, but you put all the other bros in there because there's plausible deniability.
Right. Here's the thing I can't tell. Are they doing a great job of writing the line here and letting us guess and think about it, or are they doing a terrible job of telling us that Will is gay and wants Mike?
It's really hard saying, because again, I keep on going back to the fact that this is set in 1980s Indiana.
Right.
And, but so I want to say, well, that's, you know, Mike or Will would probably be very cautious and circumspect and maybe even confused and not sure about how he should go. But on the other hand, Hawkins is also so absurdly progressive in terms of its like racial makeup and like just general kind of views of the boys and all that and how they talk and interface that like from 1980 standpoint that like maybe that would mean that they should do a little bit better of a job of like not having Will be that conflicted and scared about it. So it's like if you're living in the fictitious Hawkins, Indiana, that's secretly 2022 politically, then he should probably, you know, tell Mike how he feels. If he's living in the actual 1985 Hawkins, Indiana timeline, then yeah, I don't know. I don't know if any of that's helpful.
Yeah. And then I guess it's complicated with Robin too, right? Because they're not being coy with that at all. They're just like, yeah, Robin's gay and she's got right. crushes on girls.
But
why would they do this with Will then?
But she is being pretty circumspect about that because like they talked about in last half season, it's kind of scary if you're a gay person that you picked the wrong crush to come out to and suddenly it's a big fucking problem. So like that kind of points me to where, yeah, it's still pretty progressive. The other interesting thing about this is like Will has recently moved to California, which even in the mid 80s was, you know, known to be a lot more progressive about these issues. So I wonder if he's just been like for the first time, he's been exposed to people who are like openly gay and like seeing that as an option. And that's why maybe. The energy has changed between him and Mike. That's like, oh, God, I didn't even know this was possible. So I don't, that's
could be.
It is.
He's getting older, right? Exploring his own sexuality. He's getting older. More, thinking about it. Yeah. Having feelings that he probably wouldn't have had in the season one. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be like a Mike Will relationship beyond what they have forming, because it doesn't seem like Mike is. But who knows? Maybe he'll turn out to be bi. They'll have polycule, a stable polycule of L, Mike, and Will.
There you go.
A bisexual polycule.
Talk about progressive in the 80s.
Yeah, but like, not a kid's show,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that's the thing is like I always said, well, they're pretty young to be talking about, like, ah, they'll start to have sex here pretty soon. Some of the kids their age probably already have.
Right. I want to see them take Elle to Vegas. Do you think that's how the season should end? That they all go to Vegas and she's mind reading cards and
it would be a hell of a post credit scene.
Right.
It would be a hell of a post credit scene. Yeah, that would be, I don't know if you actually go there and do that, but
I think it'd be fun. But what does this show look like if all the kids are filthy rich?
Silver Spoons with Ricky Schroeder. I like the classic Stranger Things kids manufacturing weapons scene where they're making spike shields and tying down shields or spears. And, you know, Nancy's actually got real weapons and Steve is making Molotov cocktails with Robin. I like it. I like it. But it's also got this tinge of maybe some of the kids aren't going to make it back this time because Robin's openly talking about it.
Yeah, let me ask you this. So Vecna's plan is to rip Hawkins a new one, a gigantic new one, right?
Yeah.
To the upside down, essentially turning Hawkins into a portal.
A massive portal, yeah.
Yeah. So we got another season coming of this show. This has not been announced as the last one, right? In fact, I think they've announced that this isn't the last one.
Yes.
Is there any chance that the omen, the bad portent that Robin's feeling is them like kind of losing the battle this season and Hawkins opening up into this giant vortex of upside down and all the kids survive? But
I thought about this
in season five, because season five, man, how do you do five seasons in a row where every time the threat is we've finished the threat off? Oops, the threat is back, without that feeling like another rehash.
I've thought about this because you're right. There is the like, oh, L's going to, you know, grunt and scream at a green screen until it closes.
Right.
Ooh, won't that be exciting? But also, like, so let's say that he blows Hawkins and it's just a giant hell gate and it's essentially Doom 2, hell on earth. Mm-hmm. What the fuck are these children going to do? You know, fair. Like if it gets like if the thing blows, so, you know, like what does that even look like? Like there's these Demogorgons just spewing all over across the United States and probably Russia too. And like, it's like, I maybe L just like completely levels up. I don't know. Like, could you get a redeemed Vecna? Could you like talk him back into being a good guy and force, because like, yeah, if every time they increase the stakes, and that's the thing that's they've done the smartest in the show, is like most of the stakes are bad, but it's like containable. There's only one portal, and if you can shut that down, no matter how powerful the Mind Flayer is, he can't get to us. And that's one of the charms of the show, but it's a crutch that they lean on. If they change that dynamics, I don't know, because then it's because like, well, can a Winnebago full of kids stop like a truly worldwide catastrophe like that? I don't know, but that's the other problem they'd have with that.
And then you have to wonder, like, can they go to the source and do it right? Well, kind of like what they're trying to do now. They're going into the Upside Down to fight the Upside Down. So if Hawkins does rip open as this giant portal, you could just have them go into the Upside Down to cut away the heart of it, and maybe that would fix the problem.
You do the battle droids, you shut down the receivership, and then they all
exactly.
And that's, I guess that's if you're looking for moving pieces, what the Russians have in that tank, maybe it is the source, and if you destroy that, it shuts everything down. But I mean, like, as you can see, it's like what we're seeing is a sea of tropes that they could choose from to resolve. And are they going to just do that, or are they going to do something kind of truly mind bending? I hope they pull something really, really awesome out. But I don't know. I guess my money is on L screaming at another portal.
Yeah, and they've gotten by on tropes thus far, so yeah, they might dig back into that. Well, we'll see.
What do you think of the general action scenes?
General action scenes,
like the
shooting. I thought that when the
base king stormed, what's in particular, his name,
soldiers, are storming this underground base, this missile silo. I thought the action there was really cool with the soldiers, you know, carrying shields and raising and lowering them in time for the other guys to shoot the MPs over there. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
I always wonder when you see guys, because there's this one scene where the shield guys are advancing down a corridor and they're taking fire from the guys, and it's just pound, but like their head and feet are exposed. Everyone's just shooting dead center on that shield.
Right.
Go for the feet, man. Go for the feet. Maybe the head. The head's a little small for time, but yeah, just start spraying at their feet. See what happens.
Uh-huh. No, those MPs should have been able to easily fortify and defend that position. But
it also makes me wonder, like, who the hell are these soldiers that you got U.S. soldiers fighting U.S. soldiers?
Yeah.
Like, are they is Brenner's guys more mercenary? Because, like, obviously the colonels are, those are active duty. But, like, I thought that was a little weird that people are doing that and not even blinking an eye.
Maybe Brenner took just some dudes over to the army surplus store, the war store, and loaded up. Maybe that was, like, they were there 5 minutes before everybody else showed up.
These were members of the 1970s Hawkins basketball team that he radicalized into
his personal just keeps losing honor basketball guard. Teams, man.
Yeah, by the bushel. Every decade, the Pied Piper comes and plays a tune on his flute. Uh-huh. I want to talk about the ending of this episode before we forget to. When that journey, separate ways, badass military remix kicks in, I was like, if I was like on the fence about being up for the finale, that I got off the fence, because that was fucking badass. I loved how like the magic hour sun filtering through the Winnebago cast like this dull red glow on all the kids' faces. Very like, you know, military going to war vibes, like end of apocalypse. Full Metal Jacket kind of vibes. Yes. I thought that was just badass.
Yeah, this felt like a landing boat on D-Day or something, right? This was like
100%.
Yeah. I've seen shots like this, not in Winnebago, in other movies, and they're great. And this song is just so good. I mean, Journey, what a kick-ass band, and for this time period, it's perfect.
It's so good. I didn't look to see if this was what was it. It it was some Def Leppard, because that was the other really funny thing we hadn't talked about at the very beginning when they're trying frantic to save Nancy. Thank God the Vectas let her go. They're going through Eddie's music collection. It's just a bunch of like metal, and they're like, we need music. And he's screaming like, this is music. But he held up, I think he held up a Def Leppard.
I thought it was Iron Maiden.
Oh, was it? Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Because like Def Leppard seems a little too soft for him.
Sure. Yeah, he's an Iron Maiden guy for sure. Megadeth. Okay,
I wasn't. Yeah, yeah. Metallica. Well, is Megadeth even around then?
Yeah.
I think Dave Mustaine is still hanging out with Metallica at this era.
Yeah, they're all around, right? They're all around. Is it 86?
Megadeth. Because that was formed by the lead guitarist for Metallica taking off, right? No, in 1983 is when they founded.
Yeah.
So shut my face.
In the mid-80s.
Oh, well, should have let me know you had that card up your sleeve before you played it. God, I would have backed on down. I don't know what more I have to talk about.
Yeah, not much. I'm super excited to see this finale, and we're about to go watch it and then record our other podcast. So,
yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. If you'd like to send us feedback about any of these thoughts, do so at strangerthings@baldmove.com. We will be considering a season wrap up the following week. Strangerthings@baldmove.com. Let us know who you think's going to live, who's going to die. Of course, I guess it'd be cheating. You'll already know the answer. But your thoughts on the season as a whole. I'm really curious about, because I noticed I haven't read any of his reviews so anyone gets spoiled, but like Alan Sepinwall, who again is my favorite, is really huffing and puffing about the lengths of these episodes, keeping them from fundamentally working as thrillers. I didn't see that in this episode, but again, I haven't seen the finale. So I was really curious to see what people think about these extended runtimes going down to the final stretch. So let us know, strangerthings@baldmove.com, and we'll see you back here in a little bit with the finale. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.